Welcome back to the Rush Hour with Gus, Jude and Wendell. Top Gun Maverick came out last night. Absolutely amazing movie. Let's talk to a man now that is just like that, but in real life.
Our next guest is probably really excited about Top Gun Maverick. In fact, he's probably going to go see it after this chat. He's a former mission commander in the Royal Australian Air Force, leading hundreds of men and women on complex issues. Since leaving the ADF, he spends his days as one of the country's premier motivational speakers and entrepreneurs, with businesses across Australia and the Middle East. In fact, he's so good that he's motivated and inspired me to attempt pronouncing his last name, despite the fact that I'm extremely nervous that I'm going to screw it up. Please welcome Christian, they call him Boo, Boukosis.
Yeah, exactly. We've got Boo on the line right now. Welcome to the show. How are you, mate?
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show, guys. Mega excited. Almost excited to be on the show as seeing the movie Top Gun.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Jew saw it last night. I'm going to be seeing it tonight. But what's it like in real life, the fact that you're doing something that, you know, is your life is in danger?
It's something that we're trained to deal with. I mean, obviously, day one, you don't go flying in a big 10-ton flying machine. You start off basic, you're up, down, left and right, and 400 missions later, bing, $15 million, you're a fighter pilot.
Wow.
Boo, I mean, just tell us how realistic some of the scenes are in Top Gun, even the original and the new Maverick show.
Look, I think the original was reasonably accurate, but the latest movie, you know, I think it comes with, you know, Tom Cruise getting better with age. He's really leaned into it. He's listened to the US Navy, and the realism and the accuracy is far greater. In fact, I watched the movie last night, hosted a bunch of fighter pilots, and we all watched it, and our pulse rates were going up as we watched some of the scenes, going, wow, that's almost what it feels like in real life.
He doesn't muck around, Tom Cruise does. He certainly knows what he's about, and it took so many years for the sequel to come out, so thank God it's awesome. What does it take to become a Top Gun, Boo?
Oh, good question. And the simplest way to answer that is a lot of commitment. Most fighter pilots, it's their dream. And we're, you know, the few people on the planet that actually get to live out their life dream at such a young age. Most fighter pilots, you know, get into that seat about 21, 23, 24 years of age. So it's a 2.5-year training program. You're down selected from thousands of people. On a course of 30, you graduate about 2 fighter pilots per course. And 5 years later, you're actually at a point where you can start giving back. So all in all, it's normally a 13-year commitment. So it is a job for life. And it is a big commitment, but I'll tell you what, it's the best job going.
Mm. I want to ask about the call signs because, you know, obviously the Maverick and Rooster and different things that you feature in Maverick. However, you know, do you walk into the RAAF and then suddenly you're gifted a nickname? Obviously, you've got Boo after Boukosis, but for some of those others, do they nickname themselves or get their call signs themselves, or is that dictated by others?
It's a great question. Your call sign's never something you choose. In fact, if you choose your own call sign, everyone will make an effort to make sure it's stamped from existence. Yeah. I like that nice pun there. Shoot it down. Yeah. You're getting right into it. So for most of us, your call sign's something you don't want to have. And if someone launches an uncomfortable or nasty call sign at you, the last thing you want to do is react. Because the minute you react, you know, you're stinky. You're stinky for life. So in Australia, we're a bit more low-key. You know, the way I explain it is our call signs are a little bit like a tradie's call sign. You know, we don't go for the big, you know, viper, snake, cobra type of laser call signs. Ours are a little bit more low-key.
So your Boo, can you remember a few of your crew, what they will be called?
Yeah, mate, we had, you know, we had a Walshy, we had a Miko, you know, a Benno, Jono, Philo, Mickey, you know, Grills, Weeksy, they're all pretty tame. And the ones that weren't, you know, I really can't talk about on the radio, to be honest.
Understood.
Tell us about some of your scariest missions, though, you've completed, Boo.
Look, for a fighter pilot, the scary stuff is the stuff you can't control. So in my 11-year career, I probably had 4 scenarios where, but for the grace of God, another aircraft almost hit me, passing at sort of 3,000 kilometers per hour. You see a flash and you're like, pretty sure that was an airplane. And you get back on the ground and you recreate the whole mission. You're like, wow, that was Well, neither of us saw each other there. That was just, and most of that was in England, flying around in the UK, where it's a little country and a lot of airplanes. So that's normally for us the thing that can catch us out. You know, 4,000 kilometres per hour closing speed. You can get on top of each other pretty quickly. Intercepting Russians over in the UK, again, that was pretty interesting. Getting airborne and, you know, waving across the canopy and partaking in some of those scenes from Top Gun number one. And I did deploy to combat for a lot of the guys. You know, going to combat's a pretty heavy moment as well. Dropping weapons and knowing who's on the ground is also pretty challenging, but rewarding as well when it's supporting our own troops. So there's, yeah, it's 99% low key and 1% sheer terror is how you pretty much sum up your career as a fighter pilot.
I lived in Lincolnshire for a few years, Boo, and they had the Red Arrows there doing.
Me too, mate.
Oh,
there you go, small world. Eh?
Yeah, which part of the county were you in?
I lived at Scampton. I actually lived on the base with the Red Arrows.
Well, I lived in Ingham, which is literally 5 miles away, wow. Jude, and incredible. And of course, they went up. We knew them all. We drank with them all and so forth, and great bunch of blokes. The most incredible skills to do what they do. And of course, we got a perfect look at them practicing every single day. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, it was incredible. And the great thing about being a fighter pilot and on the base was, you know, on the days off, I used to be able to go flying with them in the back seat there. Pretty amazing. And look, it's really the pinnacle of formation flying, and they do a great job rustling up interest to join the military. But you know, every fighter pilot is trained to fly that mission, close formation. That's what we do. You'll see here in Australia, every now and again, you'll get 9, 10, 12 Hornets flying in formation for a ceremony. But yeah, doing it like that day in, day out, and the speeds at which they close and how close they are, they do a phenomenal job. I mean, they're very talented individuals.
Sure are.
Boo, can you believe the technology advancements, particularly in the fighter jets over your career and then I guess projecting onwards?
Oh, it's crazy now. They're not fighter airplanes. They're supercomputers that have wings. And what they're capable of and the stealth characteristics and being able to fly around completely unseen yet see everything else. You know, it's literally the flying version of the boogeyman. You know, for the bad guys lying in bed, they're a bit worried about what we have hiding behind the cupboard door, let me tell you. But the technology is amazing. They talk about it in the movie, don't want to ruin it for you. They touch on drones, they touch on the future. But right now, it's very much men and women in the front seat or the only seat of these airplanes. And there's another generation of fighter pilots to come, I think, before we're completely designed out of the cockpit.
Hey, Boo, I was actually put into one of your jets with obviously a pilot a few years ago. We flew from Sydney to Barrow like in 4 minutes. And on the way back, I was just talking to the guy. I was like, mate, this is the most amazing experience. Thank you so much. And he just goes, I'm really sorry, Gus, but I've got to make you sick. That's what they've got me to do. And I'm like, what? And he took me on a journey, and it was the most amazing journey, but I did throw up. What does it actually do to your body, and how do you make sure you get better at not being sick or not being affected so much at those high powers and moving so quickly and so forth and at the speeds?
Again, it's you start slowly and work your way up. So in the small training airplanes, you pull sort of 2, 3, 4 G, you work your way up to 6 or 7 G. Every time you maneuver, you're just adding a little bit more. So by the time you're a fully fledged fighter pilot, you've been in every attitude, every speed, up, down, left and right. It's completely natural. But for someone to be thrown into that environment, and not to mention you would have had the oxygen mask, the harness, the flying suit, everything is completely unnatural, and it's quite... Yeah. Even though you've got a big glass canopy on you, it's relatively claustrophobic. So for you, it's completely alien, and your body is just not geared up for it. You know, the way in which your body is designed is to keep you upright on the ground, right? Everything is designed to do that. So you don't trip over, you don't slip, you know, you're able to walk from A to B. Put yourself in a fighter cockpit, you completely blow that system out of the water. So your body, the reason why you feel sick is your brain's constantly saying, oh, okay, where's up? Why am I not standing up? And your brain just trips offline and goes, nah, this makes me sick. So if he was a nice fighter pilot, he would have given you a secret technique that we use to make sure you weren't sick, but someone must have told him to.
Yeah, well, they also fed me with Maccas. Oh. I spent about $30 on Maccas about 20 minutes before. So don't worry, it was a FM radio stunt, Boo.
Yeah, there you go. Look, it's, some people are just mean, aren't they?
You're absolutely right.
Now, Boo, you're a corporate speaker and business coach. Can you tell us a little bit how you, make that application or transition for some of the business leaders and those sort of things that apply in the business world?
Yeah, it's all about mindset. And here in Australia, I've had a really unique opportunity. I've worked in the NRL for a little while, specifically with Des and the Manly Sea Eagles. And in an environment that's very high performance, one of the things fighter pilots do is we have this debriefing technique, a very specific way in which we review our performance. And even working within high performance teams, we see as fighter pilots where, you know, the consequence of for us isn't just a try against us. It's, you don't come home. So we operate in this really high consequence environment. And 60 years ago, we came up with this special way of thinking and working. So what we do is we take that and we take it across to businesses and sporting teams. We you know, the company I'm a partner of here is called Afterburner. We work with 19 NFL teams. We've taken two of them to the Super Bowl. It's just an incredible way of just collecting your thoughts, getting things done, reflecting on those, and always moving forward, that incremental one percenters. So when you hear that word, it's the one percenters that win. Well, fighter pilots have designed the system that creates 1% each and every day.
Well, to find out more about Boo, head to afterburner.com.au. It's been fascinating talking to you. All the best
real
with
life
everything.
Maverick.
A real life maverick. Good on you, Boo. We appreciate it. And thanks for your time on the Rush Hour.
Cheers, guys.